Creating Change with Doug Foresta, a show dedicated to creativity and emotional healing. Creating Change on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Doug Foresta.
Hello and welcome back to Creating Change. This is Doug Foresta. With me today is Naomi Lufkin, and we're going to talk about, are you sick and tired of being sick and tired in midlife and beyond? And I'm going to bring Naomi right on. She is someone that I've gotten to know over the past couple months, and I think she is fantastic and really good at helping people in midlife to reclaim their authentic self. Naomi Lufkin, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Doug. Nice to be here.
Thank you. So yeah, let's start with, first of all, can you tell people a little bit about yourself and who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm a licensed professional counselor in the state of Connecticut. I went back to school in my own midlife at age 46, and it became my passion over the years after graduation and becoming licensed that my niche would be to help other women and men in midlife to embrace their authentic selves and reclaim their authentic selves.
Well, so first, maybe we can, I know we're going to talk about a variety of topics, but I actually think it would be good to define, what do you mean by an authentic self? What do you mean by that?
Your authentic self is the very true part of you, that who you are at the core when you take away all the, as I call, the foo-foo stuff that has the layers that have piled upon you since childhood. And you grow up, and it could be at age 25, 45, 55 that you have lost your ability to look in the mirror and realize who really and truly am I? Because of the messages that have been handed down in childhood, the commands and demands of perhaps just life getting in the way, and you go off course, off center.
And thank you. Yeah, yeah. Really, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, the longer, I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to. I certainly can relate to it myself. And I suppose, you know, it's funny. I thought I was like, oh, well, I'm not in midlife, but I'm 43. So guess what? I'm in midlife, aren't I?
Yes. You are on the younger side of midlife. That's the little secret, because today people are living to 90, 100 years old. But it, yes, technically it would be actually from 40 to 65, believe it or not.
Wow.
The ramifications today.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Well, yeah. So I know one of our first things we're going to talk about is how to see crisis as a danger versus opportunity. So can you say a little bit more about this? What do you mean by that?
When, you know, I can say when trauma happens, such as one of my clients gets divorced, or your children are grown up and go off to college. I mean, there are a million things that can happen in one's midlife, widowhood. The first thing that happens is danger, danger, danger. Woe is me. How am I going to get beyond this? Or I'm never going to get beyond this. And it would be with practice and your, what I call worldview, how you see life. Do you see the glass half full or do you see it half empty? Because it's going to take work to be able to see that did this divorce bring about as opportunity for you? What was, again, were you your authentic self in your marriage? And you weren't, probably. And what that will afford you now going forward in terms of being proactive. And if you want to find a better partner that's more suited to your own values and worthwhile, then you have to see the opportunity as well as the grief and loss in all of this. But the first thing people, you know, want to say, and rightly so often, is woe is me, but not to stay there, not to stay stuck in that danger. It's to be able to see the hopefulness, the opportunity in terms of how they go forward in their lives. And I know that's easier said than done.
Yeah, I mean, having gone through a divorce myself and, you know, being in that, when you're in that space, it just feels like life is never going to get better. What, you know, I know that you work, you know, you're obviously a coach, you're a speaker, you're a therapist. In your experience, like, what do you think, I know you spoke a little bit about that some people can kind of turn it around and then others get really stuck in it. What do you think is the difference between the people who are able to pull themselves out of crisis and then the people that just seem to get stuck in it? You know, we all know those people who, you know, they're still going to divorce support groups 15 years later, you know?
Yeah. Yes. And I see that a lot in my own practice. And what happens is, I think it's very easy to be caught up with, I'm the victim here, especially, let's say, with divorce. I'm the victim. He was terrible to me, or she was, awful to me, and, you know, so abusive. And so to stay with that mindset and anger, I talk a lot with my clients about unresolved anger. And so many people will say, I'm not really angry anymore. Or no, you know, well, that's because you've pushed it down for so many years and you've turned into the victim. So it does take the side where, you, again, going back to crisis, looking at the danger side versus the opportunity, which could be, how do you become more optimistic in the world? How do you become more proactive about you and your life rather than staying stuck in that victim mode with that person going to that support group 15 years later, rather than is that person going out to try to meet people? Is it, you know, so it is a mindset that all can be changed, but you have to be aware of your patterns. You really have to be aware and say, I'm being a victim right now. And I that's not the easiest thing either. But I think that's what, you know, would help you, you know, get out of that justification for ending up going to that support group for 15 years, you know, being in a divorce support group and not,
you know,
moving on.
As you say that, you know, I think about, I mean, for me, I think it was a couple of things that I realized. You know, one thing I came to realize eventually is that we walk a path with someone for as long as we're meant to walk that path. And then sometimes that path is no longer one that we walk together. And although there's loss and grief, and we're going to talk about loss and grief in a little bit, but that's, you know, you either accept that, or as you said, it's the kind of thing where you get stuck. And I do notice, you know, even for myself, same way, like even being aware of that victim self versus the other self. I actually had a moment like this today where I had, you know, someone sent me an email and it was really about an opportunity, but somehow in my mind, I turned it into myself being a victim, you know? And I thought to myself, well, is that really true? Like, is that what's actually happening, or is that my perception of what's happening? Do you find that we like tend to, I guess that it's very easy to stay stuck in victim mode. Like, what are there payoffs for being a victim and staying in victim mode, in your opinion?
Are there payoffs?
Yeah.
I would say, no, there are no payoffs other than, well, the payoff to the person that's a victim is they can't get out of their own way, so they stay stuck and they stay in their comfort zone and can't grow and move on in their lives. And yes, I mean, you brought up a great point yourself about what happened today, because you had thoughts and beliefs get in people's ways every single day. So today you had a moment when you read your email, your thought turned out to be irrational as opposed to rational. So, I mean, it's kind of like a web of different components, or like a symphony. I see a symphony leader going, there's anger, there's grief and loss, there's distorted thinking. My thoughts go from rational to irrational. So, I mean, the payoff is it keeps the person stuck and no movement, and the person stays with the familiar. That's the only payoff. And then they can justify, well, you know, look at me, you know, I had a terrible marriage or this and this and this, or I got fired from a job, rather than really looking at themselves and say, how did my actions contribute perhaps to in that marriage, in that job loss, whatnot? It would be taking accountability.
Right. It's a very bad sign, isn't it? If you meet someone and they say, I was in a relationship and it ended, but it was not my fault at all. I had no role. I played no role in it ending, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I listen to this every single day, and I have to remind some of my clients, what is your part in this? Because unless you acknowledge it, then you yourself are acute. It's always right, the victim, and it's his or her fault forever. So, yes.
I do think, though, that there is a seductive quality. I've heard people call it the cave, you know, the living small, where you do what you've always done. You know, I've certainly, in my own life, like I said, you know, after my divorce, I got divorced in 2011. And after my divorce for a good while, maybe a couple of years, I really went into that cave, you know, into that place of just wanting to stay in this very small place. And maybe that's what I needed to do. But it can become seductive in a way, I find, that it becomes, you can get used to it because it's maybe it's stuck, but it also feels safe.
That's right. Sense? Yes, yes. This is true. This is true. And well, that's it. People, you stay with the familiar. And if you're not getting out of your comfort zone, right, you're staying safe and secure. And you know, the downside is, you know, there is no movement. And that's why when I start to see clients have some aha moments, I'll say to them, you must now be getting sick and tired of being sick and tired. And perhaps that's the whole piece, is being willing to step out of that safety zone. I understand what you're saying. And certainly you were going through grief and loss.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the other thing that I wanted to discuss. I think as we get older, we lose people, we lose jobs, we lose things. Can you say a little bit about how we can navigate, how can we successfully navigate grief and loss in midlife? It's just a small question, Naomi. And if you can answer that in five minutes, that'd be great.
the piece that certainly for myself and what I do to work with clients, I had taken a training myself years ago, and it's based on what's called the grief recovery model. And what their whole premise is resolving the pieces that have been emotionally unresolved. So for instance, it would be you, and there are steps within this particular, it's called the Grief Recovery Handbook, that talks about doing relationship graphs and loss graphs, all culminating with eventually a letter that's being sent, you know, energetically, meaning it's not actually sent, but it addresses apologies, forgiveness, the forgives they call it, and emotionally significant statements. And you transfer like three each. And you transfer the apologies, the three apologies I am sorry for, the forgives I forgive you for, I forgive you for, I forgive you for, and the emotionally significant statements, you know, you betrayed me, you're no good, I hate you. So it's all those, you take them and transpose them into a letter, and it's a final goodbye letter that really releases all that you've never given voice to. And that helps the completion. I mean, there are lots of different thoughts about grief and loss, but, you know, and I was talking to a client last night, it's more than just crying. Clients will come in and say, well, I'm over that, you know, that loss. And meanwhile, everything I hear, the anger, you know, the gusto and the life it's giving is, no, you haven't worked through that. So there are different components, but I work based in the last several years on the grief recovery concept, the grief recovery model, that completes all that's emotionally unresolved. So I hope that in a nutshell, I can zoom in on telling you that piece, because, you know, often in my office, I'll say, here's a pillow, start hitting it, throwing it, doing something about how, you know, your spouse treated you in your divorce, or, you know, how dare that spouse leave you and die. So but all those components go into that, what makes up that final letter that is all what you've saved up. And it could be over a period of 10 years, or it could be a month after somebody experiences that loss. That's how I work with that. And it seems to work well.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, as you were saying that I was thinking about is, you know, the whole concept of midlife, if you think about it, we have this whole kind of existential, this existential thing that we have faced now that we didn't face before, because the reality is most people didn't live out of midlife, right?
Right.
You didn't have to ask yourself, what am I going to do with my life? Because you really didn't have an opportunity. You would be dead soon.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, you've got more years.
Sure.
And what are you going to do? What are you going to do with that? And one of the things I love about your work, Naomi, is this fundamental choice between, am I going to choose to live out of victim mode, or am I going to choose to live out of what would you call the other side of it?
Well, proactive and reactive.
Yeah.
Empowerment versus the empowered self versus the victim.
Yeah. And I, you know, the name of the show is Creating Change. And that's really, when I started it, that's what it was really about, is this idea of people wait for change to happen, but are you going to have the courage to create change in your life?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And that's right. Exactly. And, you know, it's up to people. And that's why I think what I witness is, you know, people come in for psychotherapy or life coaching or whatever. Yes, I want to change. But they soon realize, I have to do some work. Well,
we only want two things, right? We both want to change and don't want to change. That's certainly what I found.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, I can tell the people that I'm in therapy or I've gone to a life coach, but it's, you know, it's being proactive and really taking accountability for those steps. Nobody else is going to help you change. I wish that were the case, but it's really up to you. It's up to each individual in the end to say how badly, how sick and tired are they at this midlife stage and beyond, because no one's going to come and wave a magic wand and say, boom, you know, there you go. You'll be that, you know, musician or teacher.
Don't you think sometimes people go to therapy and they do have that expectation?
Of that they want the therapist to change
them? They want the magic wand.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. Absolutely. But most often they do.
You know the joke about... You know the joke about how many psychotherapists does it take to screw in a light bulb? To change a light bulb?
No.
So it only takes one, but it takes a really long time and the light bulb has to want to change.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. It's more than just showing up. And of course, I talk to clients about this, about there are stages of change. And, you know, that I learned, you know, gobbledygook in school. But there is 100% truth, because when somebody calls up on the phone to enter therapy or perhaps life coaching, they're either pre-contemplating or contemplating, I need help. And then I believe the next stage is preparation. So they're preparing, they're going to go, you know, the next week, where's the person's office? And then the next stage is action. And that's where, that's the actually the hardest. I mean, I sit with clients for years, and it could be very small movements until they decide that, nope, I'm going to sit with them. But it's really, really up to you. I'll support you in those changes. But and how you live your life and looking at your life, but it's up to you to actually move forward and make those changes. And again, not easy, not easy. I went back to school at 46 years old, and all I knew was, I think that light bulb went off, that I want to help people and make meaning and purpose out of my life, coming from a dysfunctional family where there is and was mental illness, and I felt completely helpless and powerless. And to me, at that midlife stage, when that aha moment hit, it was the most beautiful thing, because it kind of all gelled together. And that was going to be my life's mission, to help others.
So, as we wrap up, I want to ask you about patterns of change. And one of the things you talk about is how we have patterns about how we react to change. Can you say a little bit more about those patterns?
Yes. You know, when people are in that victim mode, it, you know, oftentimes I'll point out to them, well, wait a moment. You said to me that several years ago, you know, you made these changes. And so what happened to that? What about that? And I think it takes a conscious choice on an individual's part to realize and to be aware that, wait a minute, all is not lost. I did, you know, do this and that in my earlier life, you know, because if you see yourself as, oh, everything's gone wrong, there's never been anything right. That's what's called catastrophizing. You're thinking of the worst possible thing. So you have to see that there's that pattern of, okay, did you make some successful changes? Have you changed in your life before? And, or is there a pattern where everything is, you know, woe is me? And, you know, you do something, but it's, again, how do you see yourself? And getting caught up in, oh, there I go again, you know, you see, oh, see, I was fired. Oh, I'm no good. But it's the beliefs that you hold and the values you hold about yourself. So if there's a pattern of that thinking that you hold and you don't change it and you don't be aware of it, you'll die with that same victim mentality. But you've got to see in your life, where have you gone right? What breaks that pattern of woe is me? Just a moment. I did, you know, something that was extraordinary at 25. Why did I forget about that? And so I think people dissociate from those parts of themselves to prove, you see, I'm a loser. When, you know, it's, well, no, you're not. So it's again, a pattern of how you think and believe, and to break that pattern with thinking, my thoughts are irrational. You have to be able to acknowledge that and say, I've got to get on course to have rational thinking. And I talk to people about what's called life traps, whether it's a defectiveness life trap, that I'm not good enough. It's not that you're defective, but it's a life trap that comes from the childhood that you grew up in. So it's distinctly patterns of what have you succeeded in your earlier life. I loved school, so I went back to school. That was where a lot of my happiness was. So it's things like that to figure out that, like all of what I said, that's your authentic self. I mean, it's quieting the mind. It's sitting with yourself and going, what do I value in my life? What do I hold dear? So does that make sense here?
It does make sense. And, you know, I think what I would say to listeners is, you have to start by noticing You know, my friend Cheryl Hunter says, your thoughts are not your friends. And sometimes our thoughts are not our friends. And that we have to notice when we have to notice what we're thinking, notice a pattern of thinking. But I think, I don't know what you think about this, Naomi, but I think as we get older, we really, when you're 20 years old, I think you feel like you can make all the mistakes in the world because you have all the time in the world. Mm. And then as we get older, you feel the sense, even if you have another 20, 30, 40 years, you don't have a sense that life is infinite, that it's just this infinite road in front of you. And I think we're called to ask ourselves, what am I doing with my life? What do I want to do with my life?
Exactly.
And I think one of the beautiful things, Naomi, about what you help people with is you really help people, like you said, reclaim your life. Do you want to live your life? Woody Allen had this in his stand-up. He did a stand-up, I think it was in the 60s, and he talked about that. He said, I went to the South and I was kidnapped. He goes, my whole life flashed in front of me. He goes, I remember going to the lake with Betty Lou and eating gingham. He goes, then I realized that it wasn't even my life. He goes, my whole life flashed in front of me and it wasn't even my life. And, you know, we can end up like that joke. We can end up where our life is flashing in front of us. And then it's like, is this the life that I want? Let me ask you this question. If I'm stuck and I need some extra help, right? What should I do? I mean, is it possible that sometimes we do need some extra help in getting unstuck from these patterns?
Yes, sure. I mean, you can do, I mean, you have to, again, be aware. And yes, I mean, you could call on a psychotherapist for, it could be a tune-up. It could be just help because, or life coach, it's you getting out of your own way. And when I tell clients, I'm objective. A therapist is objective. They're not in the fix of your life and can see more about your patterns and be able to reflect back what they see. And so for you to then start seeing, oh my God, you know, that does sound like me. And so, you know, it's hard. I mean, so many clients will say they looked at self-help books for a long time. And their self-help books are great. But it's like, I think of psychotherapy as being in collaboration or life coaching. It's collaborating with somebody who can be objective and to see all your strengths, all your gifts, all your talents that you may have just kind of wiped away and can't see.
If people want to reach you and they want to work with you or they want to hire you to come in and speak, how can they reach you?
I have a website, so they can, it is www.midlife-transitions.com. They can certainly, that's a great way to, you know, see and contact me through my email, which is N for Naomi, S as in Sam, Lufkin, Lufkin @AOL.com. I'm on a couple of web directories, Psychology Today and Network Therapy online, or call me.
Naomi Lufkin is my guest today. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your words of wisdom. I also want to put in a plug that you have a new podcast coming out called Midlife Transitions Radio.
Yes.
And I encourage my listeners to check it out.
Yes, I had a wonderful coach that helped me.
Who was that devilish?
He did. He took me from understanding no technology to a great job. So yes, please check them out. And Doug, you've been terrific. You really have been invaluable on this brand new journey for me as I became proactive with starting a new project, you know, with these podcasts. So thank you so much for all your expertise in this. You've been invaluable.
Thank you so much, Naomi. Thanks for joining me.
Sure.
And thank you everyone for listening. As always, we'll be back next time. Keep creating. The world needs your gifts. This is Doug Foresta at Creating Change.